Hello, I'm John Zombro, and this is the Lifetime Athlete Podcast. I want to thank you for being an audience member and for listening to the show, for sharing it with people that you care about, that you think these messages can be of benefit. Thank you for giving us a rating and review if you've already done so. And if you haven't, certainly would appreciate it. Just helps us to really rise up in the rankings. And when more people search for health, fitness, and performance podcasts, they're more likely to find us. So again, thank you for that. And also thank you to all of my clients and folks that I'm currently working with at the Lifetime Athlete. Those are people that I'm coaching in different capacities, as well as working with in the training tribe. I've got to say also, I'm always thankful and want to start this show off by saying hello to my wonderful and amazing co-host, PK. How you doing, buddy?
I'm doing great, John. Doing great.
Well, I've got some just some shout outs. Just want to jump right into Jeff. I'm shouting you out, Jeff, because you're awesome. You're a Training Tribe member. And he had just posted on the T2 forum his results so far this week. This is the third week of the month where we usually do our intensification. And with that comes a key performance indicator or KPI test. We're doing some repeat box jumps and some standing broad jumps. And he put his numbers up, which were quite impressive. So, hey, way to go, Jeff.
Nice, crushing.
Total. So one of the things that we do in the Training Tribe is we layer function. And if I try to explain that in a way that just makes common sense, shall we say, we want to ensure competency with the developmental sequence. So those basic positions of, you know, prone or laying face down, sideline, getting up to kneel and crawl and stand and all the things that relate to that. Well, we actually don't want to lose that as we go through this lifespan. It certainly impacts health and also performance. Moving from that developmental sequence and layering our function, I always try to help folks to master the basic movement patterns. And so some of those are debatable, but certainly we've got things like squat and hinge, push, pull, lunge, twist, and ambulate. So we do that and we incorporate that into our training. Then we start to build this layer cake, if you will, or multiple layer burrito.
Now you're romancing.
Yeah, it's delicious. So we're tuning common athletic skills. So those things like, you know, throwing and catching and jumping and cutting, we put that into our training because it's essential to maintain in the beast as well as to help you with any sporting endeavor that you prefer to pursue, shall I say. And then what we do really is we enhance the big five. And so the big five are the major capacities of human performance, that being strength, speed, power, agility, and endurance. And we do that with a conjugate, kind of like conjugate slash undulating block periodization model. That's a lot of words, which we've actually talked about here on the show before, but we find a way to divide the year up into sections or blocks and we blend those things in, but we emphasize only one in any given block. And that's a great way to build complete athleticism, an athletic or all around athlete. And we just have a blast doing it. So within that, the topic of really what today's show is all about is what is reasonable for every Lifetime athlete with respect to locomotion. And locomotion is bipedal ambulation, because we're humans, we're on two legs, we're upright. So that's how we're getting around on our two legs or feet. And we make sure that every Lifetime athlete is capable of having this ability to sprint, run and jog, and walk to a reasonable degree. And that's what we're going to hope to define today. It's good for health. It's a baseline performance, but it really defines function in the beast.
Absolutely. And just, you know, connecting what we do on the show, obviously with the Training Tribe and the world at large, I mean, we are all moving around. And I think that simple movement can be overlooked. It certainly can be overlooked in training. But I think that, you know, what you're doing is you're always connecting the dots between, you know, whatever your focus is, whatever the block period focus is, and movement locomotion, as you call it. So I'm excited to learn more, John.
Yeah, and when you said that, connecting the dots, another shout out to another tribe member, Brian. He reached out to me yesterday and it was a pretty cool conversation, to be honest, because what he had been doing, you know, as many of us do, is listening to his weekly collection of health and fitness podcasts, including this one. And, you know, Brian had said to me, gosh, you know, I just listened to a really big one, a popular one, and they are saying a lot of the things now that you've been saying for years. And I was like, wow, that's very flattering. You know, I'm a humble learner, growth mindset every day trying to do that. But I was explaining to him, well, now what I'm trying to do, I'm seeing some of the basic health concepts of, you know, just sensible things like sleep and nutrition and stress balance or stress management and activity, you know, that's really starting to solidify across camps. And then in the performance world, because I think we span both here at the Lifetime Athlete Foundation of Health for Lifelong Performance. Well, in the performance world, I'm starting to also see, you know, kind of a trickle down and a better understanding of research and people not doing things that are asinine, if you will. And so now my challenge in connecting the dots, which was your comment, is how can I kind of put these things together even more closely and pull people in so that we've got, you know, people doing high performance training that are keeping nutrition on path with that level. And then we've got, let's say, your health enthusiast, your longevity enthusiast, embracing further some of these, you know, dynamic movement patterns in the body for which we are all designed.
Absolutely. It's really, today's topic is applicable to everyone, and it's just where you want to apply it to whatever you got going on in your life. So let's dive in.
Okay. And I have fun with this topic. So if my coffee's kicking in, as I often say, okay, here we go. Well, I like to start off most of these conversations using or viewing the topic through an ancestral lens. And so really, that's just asking ourselves, well, you know, what did humans do for 3 million or so years? You know, what are the identifiable trends or patterns? And so with these types of locomotion, you know, we're just going to talk about how humans have moved and are designed to move and give some examples.
Let's do it.
Okay, so I like to just keep it at three levels: walk, jog, and or run, and sprint. And so those three things represent, you know, how this body's designed to move. You know, you can walk, and, you know, walking's slightly different than the other two because you always have one foot on the ground. And then you know, within running, you know, the slowest or easiest of running is jogging, I'll say it that way. And then sprinting, in other words, all out, 5 to 10 seconds, max velocity, you know, that's true speed. And so we have these three things that are very similar because they have a reciprocal motion pattern, but they're each unique slightly in, you know, how the body functions and also what we can use those movement patterns for.
Absolutely. So just give me some ancestral examples of these three.
Okay, so here we are. We're hunting and gathering for all or most of the day. Well, most of that's made up of walking and some other types of movements, but that's that kind of low level, you know, general daily activity or GDA that we are often celebrating here.
Absolutely.
Okay, then next up, we've got the jog. And so here's the scenario that I often describe. I'm sure there are many others, but we had been out hunting and gathering, and we're moving across the savanna back to the cave. And that could be, you know, more figurative than literal. Just, you know, we're heading out from the open and into some area of shelter. Well, all of a sudden, there are some cumulonimbus, dark clouds on the horizon, and they're rumbling, and a thunderstorm is coming. So we hustle up a bit, and we pick up the pace and trot to get back because the Gore-Tex jacket had not yet been invented.
Absolutely. I think we've all been there for sure.
Oh, yeah. In fact, one time I was out with my fam and dog, and we were hiking on a short trip here in the local Bridger Mountains near Bozeman, Montana. And that happened and we started hustling and we did not make it, and one of those violent hailstorms trapped us, and we were on a section where there weren't many trees available, and so we got down off the trail to the nearest tree that we could, you know, kind of hunker sit and pull our jackets up over us, and the dog basically frantically dug a hole and got in.
Yeah, how long did you have to sit there for?
I think we got pounded for like 10 or 15 minutes, which seemed like forever. Because, you know, when that happens, forever. Yeah, the temperature can go from like 85 to 40. And, you know, it can be a real hypothermia risk in some situations. But, you know, we were only a half mile from the truck and the heater, so we were fine. But, yeah, these things happen. And I guess that example says they happen to modern people as well as quote unquote cavemen.
Indeed. All right. So lay next example on it.
Okay. The next example looks at sprinting. And so here we are. Now we're back at said cave or shelter area around the campfire, perhaps, if we're only looking back a few hundred thousand years and the use of fire. But we're there. And then unfortunately, a large toothy predator dashes into camp. Let's say it's a saber tooth, whether that's correct in terms of time or not. Well, everybody scatters for the nearest tree and safety. Hopefully everybody makes it, but that's a sprint.
Yeah, and I think that, you know, with all three of these examples, the, you know, we're all modern technology, we're recording this sort of from different locations today in 2021, but going back as far as you can look, the three different types of locomotion, as you describe it, they're just in our genes, and people have been, versions of people have been doing all of them. Same applies today. And you don't need a podcast. They didn't need a podcast to tell them this is an important way to move. They were just doing it to survive as part of their daily life.
Yeah, and that's exactly right. They're evolutionarily consistent patterns for which we're genetically wired. And here's the big thing, though. We have, let's say, if you say 3 million years of solidification of this into our genetic programming, well, then the last couple of centuries, let's say three or so, it is possible to not use those as much as we probably are supposed to do.
Yeah, and I think there's a lot of arguments to be made that potentially, and I'm sure we'll get into it later, that some of those capacities have dwindled in the last few centuries. But let's make the connection then between the modern human and the functional correlations between these three. So you've come up with some scenarios to just say, okay, you know, it's 2021, and this is how we apply those same types of locomotion to our daily lives.
Okay, well, here's something that still happens today somewhat commonly. The car breaks down in a rural area, and either you have no cell service or you have a dead phone, the battery died. That's not out of the realm of things, and you got to walk. And so it's nice to be able to say, oh gosh, you know, I'm going to walk a couple of miles and, you know, take care of the situation, whatever steps are needing to be involved. Well, I have a quick story about that, something like that, that I observed just a few years ago. It's only two or three. I was out with my friend Mike. We were fishing actually down on the Lower Madison, and you know, we'd done a car shuttle. And so when we had taken out and got the drift boat back on the trailer, we were driving back up the gravel road along the river. It's flat to get to, you know, where we parked the other vehicle and do all that stuff. Well, we came around the corner, a bend in the road along the river, and there was a couple there, you know, middle-aged couple, you know, didn't look too healthy, somewhat overweight, maybe out of shape. I'm not trying to be derogatory, but that's sure. The vision I saw. And they were in distress. So we pulled over and said, hey, what's going on? And they said, well, you know, we were floating on tubes with our tour group, and we were out in the front, and we didn't realize we were supposed to take out back at the landing back there. And now we're like a mile downstream, and we're stranded, and the bus is going to leave us, and there's nothing we can do. And so we thought, well, hey, just throw your stuff in the back. We'll give you a ride. No problem. And, you know, we're about to do that. And around the corner comes the bus, who had recognized that they the count was off and they came looking for those folks to pick them up. And I watched their faces and the sense of relief that came over them, because, you know, in talking a little bit later sure. with them, it's like, well, sure. we can't walk that far. We couldn't have walked. We were pretty sure that we were abandoned and going to die right there. And I was like, no, that we wouldn't have let that happen. But it really impressed me powerfully, because it's like, gosh, you know, we should all have this ability to think nothing of. It's like, okay, I'm hustling. I'm on foot. No problem. I'll just walk a few miles and get back to wherever it needed to be.
Yeah, John, I think that any number of scenarios of walking, it is an integral part, or should be, that capacity for just walking everyday life. I think it's kind of, that's a warning light that I see, or, you know, thought bubble above of that story that you're just telling, that is very bad. You got to be able to walk a couple miles no matter what, at the very minimum. And I think that, you know, your story illustrates that that's not always in everyone's tool chest in the modern day, and that's scary.
Yeah. So moving from walking into this this jogging realm, I've got another example and also a personal story. And so let's say that at any point, you know, you have to catch the subway, a bus, a train, a plane. And I understand, you know, these days with TSA running in the airports, you got to be careful with that. But nonetheless, it happens, and we've all done it. Well, I am not advocating here that everyone become a marathon runner. I'm just saying we need this ability to jog a bit. And so, gosh, it's been a while. I'm going to tell you, it's over 2 decades. Well, no, actually, it's almost 3 decades. Hey, John's getting old. I happened to be going to a conference. It was a, you know, physical therapy conference, and it was in the summer, and my family was with me. And at this time, you know, I don't want to tell you how old my son was, but he was probably 4 or 5 years old. So that would make this, you know, like 25 or so years ago. So that's probably the most accurate. Well, we happened to be in the Atlanta airport, which, you know, some people will recognize that, oh gosh, the Atlanta airport. But we got, you know, we're landing. And of course, that's when the flight attendant says, well, you know, you're probably not going to make your flight because we're late, and the flight, by the time you deplane, you're going to have like 10 minutes to get most of the way across to that terminal. And I was like, well, how far is it? And she's like, it's a mile. And I'm like, we got this, you know. So we jumped off the plane, and I carried my son, and, you know, we had the carry-ons with wheels, which my wife pulled. And you know, she's pretty, pretty fit as well. And, we made it, man, you know, so, we hustled, 10 minutes, about a mile, through the airport. And, it actually ended up saving us about 7 hours, because the next flight to where we were going, would have been that long. And, hanging out in an airport is just not comfortable.
No. Yeah. So that's more of a run, because you're moving swiftly, but not sprinting. What's your third example for the modern day functional correlation?
Yeah, this is why we need to keep sprinting alive in our bods, because you step into the street and you start crossing the street and you didn't see the delivery truck coming. And so the brakes are squealing, the horn is on, but it's close, and you got to haul ass to live. And that's a reality.
Yeah, I think it should be, you know, hopefully that we're paying attention. And you can, you know, giddy up and get out of the way. I think that, John, in some ways, scary is the word that just keeps leaping to mind, because you're describing the most basic of movement. You know, like if you can't do those three things, I think that you're in big trouble. And I am not trying to be, you know, judgmental by any stretch, but it just seems like, you know, you got to have that in the bag no matter what your age is, just to live in the world.
Yes. Basic functional patterns. That's why we're emphasizing them with these examples. And also, any of us would be at a great deficit if we lack them. Now, I want to go right into saying, I am always understanding and respectful for those individuals for whom that's just not possible, because they have orthopedic issues, congenital issues, systemic problems, obesity, you know, you name those things. For those people, they could be temporarily or even permanently unable to perform these functions. Sure. And so, you know, we just want to say, okay, we know that, but actually there's a lot of people both gen poppers and athletes alike who almost take for granted that these things are there and they don't keep those capacities. They let them slip away. And I think that there's a message here, almost a warning. It's like, hey, let's not do that.
Yeah, especially I'm thinking about those folks you encounter on the side of the road. It's like, that is sort of a scary warning. Let's just change gears a little bit and just dive into the TLA and how you think about this locomotion, just from a sort of basic baseline perspective.
Yeah, just boiling it down simply, any lifetime athlete should be able to do this, to be an athletic beast and possess these qualities. And so we also look at things, not just locomotion, but like strength and skills, like I mentioned earlier. But locomotion is critical, and it's this: sprint a 40 or so without blowing up or out, you know, don't pull a hamstring or whatever. Jog a mile without stopping due to exhaustion, just 1 mile. Doesn't matter how slow, it's just continuous. Walk 5 miles continuously with relative ease and be able to do those things any day on demand, back to back, without being destroyed.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
So yeah, that was as succinct as I probably am capable of being. And if I kind of go into this case that we're building, as we discussed, we talked about ancestral patterns, modern day examples, basic athletic requirements. Well, now we get into the examples of pushback. And so I have had this conversation, I don't want to say thousands, that's probably not fair, but hundreds of times over numerous decades with people. And it's very interesting, some of the responses I've received and observations that I've made. And so I'm going to try to exemplify those as well.
Yeah. And so I found that interesting because this, you know, we're having this conversation. We've touched on versions of this on the pod, and certainly in our conversations between the two of us. This seems like so basic and so much common sense. I am interested to hear the pushback, because it's just hard to imagine, based on what you've laid out there, anyone having a reasonable objection. So let's hear it, because I want to kind of get a better understanding, and then maybe we'll tap into, I guess, the mindset of the person who is pushing back. What do you want to start with? You want to start with sprinting?
Yeah, let's do that. Let's start in order of fastest to slowest. So with sprinting, here is a very commonly occurring thing that happens for me, because I coach a lot of people. I coach people who are trying to improve their body composition, you know, to tune up, lose weight, that sort of thing, to solve injury problems. But again, most of them are performance-oriented folks. And so we've tried to use a lot of the good science that's available in program design. And, you know, we've talked about that at length on the show as well, and probably will continue to do so. But I get a lot of folks who are distance or trail ultra runners, if you like that phrase, whose race, or, you know, preferred thing that they do, uses a much slower pace than sprinting. And so we have this conversation. So first of all, I'll say when they tell me, well, I don't need to do sprinting because I'm mostly just going kind of long and slow. And I'll say true dat, but speed training, this is well supported in research. It enhances running economy and efficiency. And so in doing that little bit, which I'm advocating for, not a ton for those folks of speed training, they typically run a bit faster with having no increased fitness, say cardiorespiratory fitness. It's easier because their mechanical system works better. They are probably slightly less prone to injury, although that's a very complex topic. And then lastly, they enjoy it more because they go faster, it feels better, and they probably get higher results. That's what happens when they put this in. And it's a small amount, you know, just, you know, once or twice a week, just a few minutes really into their training, using an intelligent progression. I love that word, intelligent, because we need to keep it in training. Well, here's what happens, you know, it turns into a fight almost. And, you know, they'll just, well, I just don't need to do it. And I don't do that kind of stuff anymore. I can't do it anymore. And I say, it's not that you don't do it because you can't, it's that you can't do it because you don't. I mean, you've lost that pattern, and we can get it back safely. So I'm on your side. Sure. I'm not trying to beat you down, But we have that part of the conversation, and then it comes back, well, if I do something like that, I'm going to pull a hamstring. And then I say, first of all, well, no, that if we do the intelligent things in your training, you're not going to pull anything. But if you think you're going to do something and it's going to cause you to pull a hamstring, don't you see that as a weakness? That's a deficiency in your functionality, and it can be corrected. And of course, they're like, some of them are like, F you. And then some of them are like, yeah, I do see that. Can you help me?
Yeah, I mean, so John, in this scenario, it really does strike me as, you know, an athlete, obviously a driven athlete that wants to keep playing the hits, you know, do the things that they're good at or feel right or not want to get out of the comfort zone. And I can see that sort of, you know, intellectual, I guess, rigidity. And so we've talked about it a lot. I'm curious, do you get people that say, I don't sprint anymore because of my age, regardless of whatever that is? I'm not even saying, you know, like, they just say, I'm too old to sprint.
Yes. Yeah. They actually just give it up. And, you know, it just gets into that use it or lose it kind of thing. And so I'm never being like idiotic, I hope, and saying, oh, you know, just, you know, go out cold and blast it. No, that's dumb. But I'm like, well, look, this is essential. Or I wouldn't be advocating for it if I didn't know that it was essential, both in terms of anecdote and science. But let's go about this in a way that creates wins. And, you know, again, there's a lot of resistance, and some of it comes to, oh, it seems scary, it seems hard, it's not my comfort zone. And I get all that, you know, but eventually it's like, hey, you know, let's do this.
Yeah. We're talking about, okay, well, let's talk about the pushback that you get for jogging/running. Cause I'm sure that there's numerous examples with, intensity on the spectrum. So what kind of pushback do you hear on that one?
Yeah. And so I'm going to say that, you know, people who are in the, like the weight room, they're very gym based in their training, you know, bodybuilders, powerlifters, you know, I actually don't coach high level powerlifters or bodybuilders. There's better people to do that than me, but I work with a lot of people who want to do some of that and incorporate it into their training. And for that, I'm qualified. But oftentimes we'll get the case of the power lifter whose sport, you know, if they compete in meets, it doesn't use locomotion in the sport, with the exception of like walking a few steps to the rack, the bench, the bar. Well, because jogging is not a KPI, a key performance indicator, for powerlifting, many of them will say, well, I don't feel the need to do this at all. It's a waste of my time. I want to work on my primary thing. And I do get that. And I'm not saying we need a ton, but I'm going to come back and say, well, yeah, but a small amount of cardiorespiratory fitness and endurance has been shown unequivocally, you know, in multiple studies to improve health and longevity. And it's equivalent to basically being able to jog a mile or so. So that's all I'm saying, you know, and then that doesn't usually get me too far in the conversation. But then the next part, when I say, well, but this also improves your trainability, your ability to train and do bigger workouts and recover more rapidly, both intra workout and in between workouts, because that aerobic base and that fitness enhances recovery ability, and thus it indirectly does affect your KPIs.
Yeah, and I think that, you know, again, I'm just, maybe it's because you've really, your messages have been absorbed into my mind completely. It just doesn't seem that big of a leap that even if you are a power lifter, being able to jog a mile and add a little bit of training for that wouldn't just help you broadly in anything you're doing, certainly health, longevity, but also performance in your sport.
Right. And I always have to, in this topic, I always have to say, well, you know, these are generally big people, you know, they're big, strong, you know, heavy boned, heavy muscle people. They shouldn't pound the pavement. I don't want to make those people into marathoners or run a lot. They don't want to do that anyway. I'm just saying, just a little bit of a jogging here and there, maybe on a soft surface, to maintain the capacity. And then we can use for their, most of their aerobic conditioning, we can use non-weight bearing means like the bike, and that, you know, that's easier on the joints. Doesn't also doesn't impact the gains as much. And, you know, if you do a lot of distance running, it actually, you know, not only is hard on the joints, but it can actually cause a signaling issue in the body, like, oh, well, we actually want to lose muscle mass as opposed to maintain it. So I'm aware of that. I just think there's a way to be sensible. And, you know, my advice to these folks, hey, look, all we're trying to do is just that bare minimum so that you don't lose this capacity. So if you're out, you know, floating down the river and I come up behind you, you're already walking.
Yeah, absolutely. Or you gotta run a mile in 15 minutes to catch it. I mean, it's just, it's so practical. So let's talk about walking. I can't imagine the pushback you get with walking. I mean, who says I don't need to walk? So anyway, lay it on me. What do you hear?
It is amazing. I mean, it's, I'm almost incredulous even talking about it as you are. And so I kind of have two examples for this one. In the athletic world, I have worked with a number of swimmers and cyclists, you know, again, so that I'm not saying they're triathletes who, you know, tend to run a bit, swimmers and bikers, you know, at fairly high level. So they're fit, you know, and they just don't feel the need to walk very much. So we kind of go back into that whole talk that I mentioned earlier, you know, that, well, this GDA or general daily activity is good for your health. It helps your recovery and training. And, you know, that they can sometimes become very surprised when they have to walk and it's just very difficult for them and they get sore and tired. And so, you know, I just say, look, humans live on the earth and gravity is present. We need to actually maintain that ability to deal with gravity because being in the pool and on the bike is not the same.
Yeah. And I think that, you know, you certainly we talked about it here and you've coached me personally, active recovery, you know, maybe you're recovering from an injury or, you know, going for a walk is one of the most healthy, restorative things you can do, just like your body sort of doing the clean out process rather than, you know, almost anything else. So I think that it's certainly it has just so much value. Any other examples that you get pushback on?
Yeah. Walking? And this one is very common and it's near and dear to my heart because, you know, I care about everybody, you know, I want to see people perform well and live happy, healthy, long lives and all of that. And I have compassion, but I also really have moved away from trying to save the world. And, you know, I really only work with and only want to work with people who are motivated to kick ass, you know, to be hard to kill and all that. And so the people whose needs are really low level and digging out of a hole and they're very sensitive, I'm not the best person for them. You know, whether it's my rock and roll quotes or 80s movies or jokes, or, you know, many other reasons, but I'm going to say it this way. This is the out of shape, metabolically sick, angry person who's negative and they're an arguing fighter in delusional denial. It's absolutely true. They're loaded, cocked and locked on why exercise isn't their thing and doesn't feel good. And, you know, I mean, I'm almost like, I can't hear that because I don't want to hear that. That's bull crap. But I try to, you know, when I occasionally have to work with somebody like that, I'll say, look, exercise is everybody's thing. You know, get over that. Let's find a way to help you embrace movement. I you know, there are ways. And then when they come back, say, yeah, but it's not my thing. It doesn't feel good. You know, cause this. So of course it feels horrible. Anytime you try something you haven't done for 20 years, your body rebels. And so then I tell them, so, you know, you need a coach. You can win. You got to face that tough love, but then there's a way to go. So obviously, like, I might not be the coach for somebody like that because, you know, they need a little bit more handholding than I'm capable of from a personality perspective. But nonetheless, this happens quite a bit, you know, and I think now that I've described it, you know, some of those people, they're like, you know, I know I probably could walk or should walk, but I hate it or it feels bad. Or every time I do it, like my foot gets sore. And I was like, well, you know, your foot gets sore for multiple reasons, but this happens.
It does. And I think that one thing it actually made me think of is 2020 in the world, the world at large in 2020, but especially where we're at in America, you know, looking back over the past year, I do think walking from the pandemic might have gotten a boost, because in the time since essentially summer on through present day, I see more people walking than I ever have before. I see families out walking, you know, just like, it's one of the things that you can do. And so I think perhaps walking has gotten a benefit, just because it was just, you know, one of a short list of things that you could do, especially with people. And so I think that maybe there'll be a little less of this pushback from Gen Pop just on walking itself, because people have, it's been one of the only things people could do.
That's interesting that you say that. And I've seen the same thing. I'm sure most of the listeners have. And I don't know. We probably need to see some statistics. I'm going to suggest that the people who are out walking were already somewhat fitness minded. And they're like, well, you know, we don't have as many options available as we had previously, so we're going to do this walk. And, you know, now we're, the kids are home, I'm working from home, you know, we got to get some air, get everybody moving. So sure, there's, sure. I'm seeing that, but I also think there are some statistics that talk about, you know, the increase in other disease pathologies, not just COVID-19, and weight gain and alcoholism and depression and suicide all have gone up, you know, in 2020. And I think those are the people that, you know, are the pushbackers. So they're not going to do it anyway. And now I think that they're less resilient as beasts, because they don't have these, you know, vibrant vitality things that walking would give them. And so they're more susceptible actually to a lot of things. But I don't know. I
know what you're doing. I think that we'll put a pin in that and circle back to it, perhaps in a, you know, after we do a little research. I'm shooting from the cuff as usual. All right, John, so this leads me to ask a question. You've laid the foundation, we've overcome these objections and these pushback. I wanna talk about, in relation to this locomotion in the three different areas, ability and practice. I know you wanted to get into the difference between these two. So the difference between ability and practice as it applies to what we've been talking about today.
Oh, I love this. And largely that was coming from the fact that I didn't start out this talk with a recipe. So, oh, here's exactly what everybody should do. I mean, those things never work anyway. But here's the difference between ability and practice is based on definitions. And I think they're obvious. Ability is kind of like you saying, I can do this thing, or, you know, or you can do it, or it's a can do. That's the ability. Then practice is sort of like, well, you know, what do you do in your training or lifestyle? How often do you do this thing in, you know, in that? And so that's really how I look at it. And all I really care about is ability. I don't care how much a person practices an activity, as long as they have the ability to meet those basic requirements of sprint the 40, jog a mile, and walk 5.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Absolutely. So talk to, you know, so how do you think about it in terms of, I don't know, advance this idea between ability and practice for me?
Yeah. So again, it doesn't matter how you get there to have these capacities. It only matters that you do. And so for a lot of these folks, I think, hey, just do the minimum amount that's right for you to keep these things going in your vibrant human beast. It's simple and it's easy. So if I take that further, I'd say we want to have a clarification on the types of training that relate to these capacities. And so sprinting is speed, and it's really true speed that we're talking about here, absolute speed, not relative speed. So relative speed is like, you know, how fast you can jog 10 miles. So that's not what we're talking about here. We're talking about, you know, what's your 40, you know, turn it on a couple seconds, shut it off. So that's true speed. Always good to visit that. And then walking and jogging fall into the category of LIST, or low intensity steady state training. And so that's our aerobic work. And how those things differ is, so absolute speed's a pure sprint. It's as I mentioned, it's less than 10 seconds, and it requires a progressive warm up, and you have to work up to what you're doing that day and what that day represents in terms of your potential with big rests and not many reps. And so that kind of training, it appeals to some athletes of sports, body types, personalities, and then others not so much, because what we're saying is, okay, let's go through some warm-ups and do all these things, and then we go really short and fast, and then we wait quite a while before doing it again, because we're not trying to condition, we're not trying to seek exhaustion or sweat, we're looking at quality. And then when you do it that way, it's actually quite fun. It's not a beat down at all, but mentally we have to kind of say, okay, that's what we want out of that type of workout. Then when you look at any of this aerobic training, whether it is walking or jogging, the list or LIST, it's easy, it's comfortable, it's not a grind. And you know, you're, depending on your expert, you know, you're sub 70% on max heart rate, you pass the talk test where you can carry on, maybe not the conversation at the rate you and I are having today, but pretty good without panting. Then everything in between list and sprinting or speed training is in the HIRT category, H-I-R-T, which is high intensity repetition training, or interval training, if you like that term. So I've talked about why I like reps better than emphasizing the work bout, which is the rep, more than looking at the rest interval. But you just don't need as much of that in your training. A little dabble, do you? Or at least for most folks. And so I want to encourage more people in all types of their training, but in this locomotion thing, like, hey, most of the time, yeah. If you're doing that sort of stuff, you know, walk, do a little jogging, and then once in a while turn on the jets. That's a great model. And where a lot of the negative experiences come is like seventh grade PE class, where, you know, we're not trained, but we're going to run all out for like the mile and puke. And that, I mean, that turns, I've met people that happened and it's turned them off for decades. Whereas, like, you know, it doesn't have to be that way. And the same way, you don't have to take a fitness class or something where it's just this really poor interpretation of that type of training, where, you know, you're just killing it with short breaks, and eventually at the end, your movement patterns are just full slop, and you actually have, you've injured yourself. We don't need that. And so there's a way to do this intelligently. And I will say also, there are crossover effects. So like, you know, if you jump rope or you play a little tennis, you do different types of weight training, do vigorous yard work. Well, actually that might be enough to keep those capacities. So, you know, you know, we have to really open our minds up and say, you know, I'm not saying every week, you know, you have to put these things in your workout. No, it's just every once in a great while, double check. Can I sprint the 40, jog the mile, walk 5? And if you can, yep, whatever you're doing is good. Way to go.
Yeah, I think that's a fantastic, I've been, you know, just thinking about, can you do it at any point in time, those three different things. So take it home, Jay-Z. What are some tips moving forward for any listener who's like, okay, you have planted a seed and I want some things to think about or take away?
Yeah, I would say this, try to consider these suggestions as reasonable. They're not extreme or excessive when you look at them. And that's very important, because we can be athletic beasts without being, you know, Olympians. That's only for Olympians. We also recognize that anyone, I mentioned this earlier, with a loss of that functional potential, you know, in that they have joint injuries or replacements or these orthopedic neurologic conditions, systemic problems, obesity too, obviously that's a factor. I think it's very important. You know, I don't think it's appropriate at all to use running as a weight loss tool for someone in high need. Again, that's my opinion. This may not be appropriate for any of those people, and that's true either temporarily or permanently. So we just want to recognize that. It's like, hey, you know, if you can, and you don't have a legitimate excuse, the note that you can hand in, you might want to think about doing this. And then I would say also, you can still do low intensity training and even sprint training in other modes if locomotion is not available to you, and you can get just as healthy and fit. You just might not be entirely functional in a locomotive context, but that's okay. Test yourself once in a while. Check on these parameters. I also think we talk about the beast is durable. It's made to be tested. Don't be a bubble boy or girl. That's important, but mainly just saying, check in on your capacities. You know, can you do it at whatever interval you want to look at? Is that once a season, once a month, maybe not once a week, but whatever. And then adjust your training to keep these beastly functions alive and well. So if you find like, oh, you know, I'm playing a little tennis, jumping some rope, doing a few other things, and that gets me able to do these things, good enough. Or if you say, well, I like doing more, you know, I like going to the track and putting out the cones and running flying 30s or whatever, oh, then do that. But again, you know, find a way that works best for your body and even, you know, the sport performance that you're pursuing. And then maybe lastly, work with a coach to help you. Saves time, effort, money, frustration to remain athletic for life and hard to kill.
Absolutely. Absolutely, John. Well, thank you today. That was educational and entertaining.
Yeah, thank you, PK. Thanks, listeners. You are fantastic. Reach out to us. Questions, comments, agree or disagree, ratings and reviews. We love it. We appreciate it. And we will tactfully and openly get back to you. Let's go.